Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and to give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 07-5307. Michael F. Wasserman, appellant, versus Denise Rodacker, United States Park Police Officer, et al. Mr. Wasserman for the appellant, Ms. Burham for the appellees.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Michael Wasserman. I'm appearing for myself. There are four issues, of four main issues or broad issues that I've raised in the case. I will address them in the order which they appear in the briefs. The first is the question of whether the remand was correct and the case should, or whether the removal was correct and whether the case should be remanded. My argument is that the FDCA in section 2679 provides for removal only from on certificate by the United States attorney in cases filed in state court. That's the term used in the statute. It doesn't say state or territorial court, doesn't say state or the District of Columbia or Superior Court. And there is no, and I don't believe that the government has cited any other provision that would cause the state to have any broader meaning than it.
But even if, let's assume you're right, that the District of Columbia under the Federal Tort Claims Act statute is not a state, the action's still removable under 1442.
If you mean by the federal officer statute,
right?
Under the federal officer statute, as with the rest of the general removal statute, the notice of removal must be filed within 30 days. In this case,
a notice of removal filed in 30 days. Right.
There was a notice of removal filed explicitly on behalf of the United States.
What was
not on behalf of the officer?
Say of the United States. Did you say of the defendant?
On behalf of the United States. The notice of removal explicitly, and along with the other papers
Who represents federal officers sued with respect to actions taken within their official duties?
Well, I believe that is at the election of the federal officer. If the federal officer requests, then the United States Attorney has a process, or the Department of Justice has a process, must complete.
The United States represents the officer, and certainly did here.
Lawyers for the Department of Justice frequently represent officers. They, as the United States Attorney's Office has said in its briefs, and made clear in its briefs, it has to complete a procedure before that representation may be extended. And under the governing regulations, the attorneys for the United States cannot act on behalf of the officer until that procedure has been completed. And in the papers filed in this court by the United States said that those procedures had not been completed. And in fact, at the time
if the 30-day period is told because the United States filed the motion to remove or did the removal, and we send it back to the Superior Court, then if it's told, then the officer removes it and it gets to federal district court, and the United States substitutes as a party, and we're right back where we started.
Well, I know of no reason whatsoever that for which it would be told.
Do you know that the notice says defendant respectfully notifies the court as follows?
There is a
footnote. It does not explicitly speak on behalf of the United States. It says defendant. That's appendix page 3.
It says in a footnote 1, undersigned counsel will represent the United States of America for all purposes and represent
I'm talking about the notice of removal, which you told me explicitly spoke on behalf of the United States.
Because it says undersigned counsel represents the United States of America. It doesn't represent the
What page are you officer. Looking at?
I'm looking at appendix 3, footnote 1.
Oh, footnote 1 says the United States should be substituted as defendant.
Right, and then it says next sentence. Undersigned counsel represent the United States of America for all purposes.
But it does not say the United States has been substituted as a defendant, does it?
Well, the...
It should be. And it says defendant respectfully notifies the court. So it does not speak explicitly. The notice does not speak explicitly on behalf of the United States. It says defendant, like I told you a while ago it did, when you told me no, it spoke explicitly on behalf of the United States.
Well, it says defendant, not defendants.
Yeah, it doesn't say United States. It says defendant. So if you're correct that...
Look at the caption of the case.
Yeah. Denise Boddicker is the only named defendant on the caption at that point.
But it... How, but that's at war with the statement in the very document that says that they're not representing Denise Roediger. And for all we know, Denise Roediger preferred...
Not representing her. It says they are representing her.
They're representing her solely for the purpose of seeking an enlargement of time. And they say...
Solely.
It says for all purposes, I think it's a clear implication. If the court disagrees,
though,
if the court disagrees,
undersigned counsel will represent the United States of America for all purposes and represent the individual defendant for purposes seeking enlargement of time. And in the same document, they file a notice on behalf of the defendant. The only defendant named at that point is Denise Roediger. How does that explicitly speak on behalf of the United States? It may be a little bit ambiguous. It's certainly not explicit. On behalf of the United States.
Well, in its appellate briefs, and also I think at some point in the trial court,
there weren't any appellate briefs yet at that point.
No, but they say that it says the process by which full Department of Justice representation can be attained, C28 CFR 50.15.
Suppose you lose on this point about the removal being improper. What's your next
very good.
Just one more question on this point. Under 1441C, that the entire case may be removed. That would be the case including both defendants,
if
you were right. So if the government were only representing the government, the United States,
right.
And it asked for removal of the action, which is what it asked for,
right.
Doesn't that get the whole case removed?
If the United States attorney had the power under 2769, or 2679 under the FTCA to remove the case, to substitute the United States and then remove the case, then yes, the whole case is removed.
Right.
The officer doesn't have to have a separate removal.
Right,
separate
your point is that it doesn't have that power, but we don't know that until it gets to federal court and the issue is adjudicated. So
it could be adjudicated. The substitution issue, whether it was
the whole case is removed.
Yes,
and
the whole
at that point, you object that the government shouldn't have been able to remove it.
Right.
But at that point, the whole case, including Roediger's part of it, has been removed.
Yeah,
we don't go non-pro-tunk,
do we? But I think my fundamental argument on that point is that the United States attorney has to have some power, has to find some statutory power. He doesn't have any common law power to substitute the United States for the defendant. And the only place that it's looked to that for that power is in 2679.
That's now you're at a merits question. I tell you, your position is, and I think is correct, that no case has decided this point before.
No.
Right? No cases.
Correct.
So it's not frivolous for the government to have done what it did. It may be wrong.
Right.
But it's not frivolous.
But it would be.
And that means, under Bell versus Hood, that means the district court gets jurisdiction, at least to determine its jurisdiction. And that means that the whole case against both of them was removed. Now, if you're right, then the government part doesn't stick, but the Roediger part does stick. It's been removed.
Well, the removal. Well, I see that my time for
It's all right.
Has been.
Well, I'm going to give you a little extra. We have probably kept you on this point longer than you wanted to stay on it, and had 10 minutes.
In fact, I interrupted Judge Santel's training.
Send him 5 minutes, please, Madam Clerk. Go ahead and take another 5 minutes.
Moving to the next point, the next point is the question of the FTCA and whether it is my exclusive remedy against for the common law claim against arising from office.
Before you get to that, see if I understand. Is your position that even if it were removable under the federal officer removal statute?
Well, I agree that it was removable if it filed within.
Yes, if the timing was correct and it was removable, is your position that the government still, under those circumstances, can't substitute?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so can you talk about that?
Well, the FTCA says filed in, it has two branches. One section says filed in a state court. The other section says filed in a district court.
My point is
it wasn't filed in either, and therefore there is no power within the United States Attorney's Office to file this a notice of substitution, let alone removal. That doesn't mean that it's not that under this branch of the argument, it doesn't mean that this is not that the FTCA isn't my only or the exclusive remedy, because that's a wholly separate subsection of 2679. So, which doesn't turn at all on where the case is pending. It doesn't turn on whether it's pending in state court or federal court or territorial court or any other court. It stands on its own in that respect. But my point is that it's for the Superior Court under the statute to decide whether or not the FDCA is my exclusive remedy under 2679C. Which is what provides for
But if you lose the point about the timing,
yes,
and we're in federal court.
If we're in federal court, then obviously the rest of the case is before this
federal court.
Before
what?
Before federal court and this court.
Could you say that again, please? I did not understand.
I apologize. I think I was trying to respond to Judge.
Yeah,
Garland's.
I did not understand. I just want you to repeat what you said.
Oh, that if the case, if the court finds against me on this point. Of state court versus whether District of Columbia state court or not, then the whole case is obviously before.
What I was asking, it doesn't for us to say that it comes in under the general removal statute. We still, and because of 30 days is okay, just assume that for the moment. That still doesn't end the problem of having to decide whether District of Columbia is a state court or not, right?
Because authority for substitution wouldn't then exist.
There would be no substitution.
There would be no substitution, and yet.
So your theory is that any federal employee in the District of Columbia cannot get the advantage of substitution.
Yes, correct.
Anybody in the Justice Department, anybody in the State Department, anybody in the Treasury Department,
right.
Any park police officer,
right.
No one can get substitution in the district.
Correct.
Well, no.
No.
No, but if you had started this action, which you could have, in federal court.
Right.
I understood
Judge Garland to be talking about having been filed in the Superior
yes,
Court.
Yes,
but if the case is filed in Superior Court.
In your case, because you filed it in Superior Court, or if anybody would sue any federal officer in the district in Superior Court, substitution would not be permitted.
That is my position.
Right.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, the... In Carter, the Supreme Court said that when a statute uses the word state, sometimes it means the District of Columbia and sometimes it means a state.
Well, strictly speaking, actually, in Carter, the statute, the Ku Klux Klan Act, Section 1, at least as reenacted in the revised statutes, provided for, it said state and territorial, mm-hmm. as opposed to state alone. So, and the same was true in Heard versus Hodges for Section 1 of the Civil Rights Act of 1966.
But was the Supreme Court's reference there about the use of the word territorial, or was it about just the use of the word state?
Well, I think it has to be read within the terms of its context, and clearly state and territory are broader than state alone.
Well, is the District of Columbia territory?
At the time, actually, that in 1871, the Congress had just enacted, the first Home Rule Act, essentially, for the District of Columbia, and that actually the initial drafts, and in common parlance later, the government of the District of Columbia created by that act was called the territorial government.
But it's not a territory under the Constitution.
It's not a territory under the it's not a territory under the Constitution. It's the District of Columbia under the Constitution. But in common parlance.
But at the time it had been referred to, or is that under a draft that was not adopted?
First, in the draft that it's not adopted, it said territorial court. But also in common parlance, if you read the records, and I have, and I could probably provide you cite, and in not just records, but also in newspapers and such, it was called the territorial government. So it was because the powers that it was given were like the many, many territorial acts.
And what about in Garris versus Lindsay? Section 2253, defining process issued by a state court under habeas as being applying to the District of Columbia.
Well, that would be, I wish the government had cited that in its brief, and I could have addressed it, but I did not myself come across that.
Well, that's the case that we relied on in McCord versus Bailey. No, I guess not in the court. It's Madley versus U.S. Parole Commission.
I don't. Was that cited in the?
I don't know the answer to that. But
I don't. I'm not familiar with those authorities.
Well, there. So in Garris, we said this circuit said that state for purposes of the habeas meant the District of Columbia. In Hobson, we said 1985-3. Now, that was any state or territory.
And there were no other, there was no definitional section that controlled
it. Not in Garris, not that I could find. In Loughran, the Supreme Court said that the full faith and credit clause, which uses the word any other state, refers to the District of Columbia.
I think that in that case, it's not the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution, but rather Congress's implementation of it.
I think Loughran was the full faith and credit clause in the Constitution.
Okay.
You think it was something else?
Well, I think.
Well, even if it was something else, it was still a statute that said every other state. I'm pretty sure it's Article 3. The full faith and credit. But so that suggests at least that the word state alone can't resolve this question.
I haven't had the opportunity because I don't believe that they were cited in the government's brief, mm-hmm. and I did not in my own research discover those. But so I can't really address, but on the surface it seems certainly plausible. And I agree it's plausible. But it's a question of whether in the context of this particular act and what Congress's specific dealings with it.
Yes, and I think that's right. That's what Carter says.
Essentially what Carter says.
Depends on context.
My argument
right.
is that because the Superior Court is even closer under the supervision of the Congress, that it would be right. entirely sensible for the right. just as in Carter, the laws of the District of Columbia are closely under supervision of Congress.
Right. So what if Congress was concerned in passing the Westfall Act that the Westfall Act had eroded immunity for federal employees and it wanted to ensure to protect against personal liability and for the entire federal workforce?
Well, Section C does that. Subsection C of 2679 does that without any reference to whether you're in a state or a or other courts.
Well, it doesn't. I mean, Congress obviously thought that substitution brought more protection, right? Otherwise, it wouldn't have done it. That's why it did it.
I agree. What the substitution does is two things. One, it allows for removal in all cases to the federal courts, regardless of any.
Well, but
in 1961, you would have had to have a jurisdictional limit, a number of things. But the other aspect that you can see in the legislative history, which I read more closely in preparing for the argument, was that Congress was concerned that defendants would be, that officers were just by being named in a suit, right. even though not receiving judgment, were having their credit affected in that way.
Right. And that's what the Supreme Court said in Osborne versus Haley. It said it was a measure designed to immunize covered federal employees not simply from liability, but from suit.
Right.
So what if Congress was concerned about doing that for the entire federal workforce? What if it said for the entire federal workforce?
Well, as I point out, that subsection C would allow for an early dismissal by the Superior Court on motion. Now, even if I file, or anybody can file a case against anybody, as we all know, and their names will magically appear, regardless of whether substitution happens or not. They're going to be in the records. Now, the hypothetical situation that is presented is just simply whether Congress trusts the Superior Court to quickly dismiss the case without having to go through the process of substitution.
But if Congress's general principle about this was substitution is the way we're going to go in order to protect federal employees.
Right.
And that includes both the liability issue and the being subject to the suit in the first place. And if it's stated in its findings, which it did, that its purpose was to protect the entire federal workforce, if that's the context, doesn't that suggest that for this purpose we should define state as the District of Columbia?
Well, early dismissal would fully protect as fully as substitution.
Then why didn't they allow that for everything? If that's the case, why wouldn't that
because be true for they everything? Wanted to make sure that in the case of a state court, that the question be the question of exclusivity, and also the question of whether, or, you know, any other questions, and such as whether the substitution or the certificate was proper, be decided by the federal court, by a federal court, a federal forum. But here, the Superior
why,
Court.
Why allow substitution forum. In federal court?
Because the.
I mean, if we obviously trust, your point is we trust federal courts, all right, for the one arising in a federal court, why allow substitution at all? Why did they do that?
I would have to suppose that the they figure that if it's proceeding in a federal court where there is federal jurisdiction over, I mean, that's where the exclusive jurisdiction lies in suits against the United States. And Congress could conceivably have decided, well, we want to have the United States in where there's jurisdiction in that court to decide claims against the United States, such as in the district courts. In the Superior Court, they hadn't extended any authority to decide claims against the United States. So substitution and staying in federal in Superior Court, if they had provided for substitution without removal from Superior Court, then the case would have proceeded against the United States in Superior Court, which 1346B doesn't allow, and I don't believe has ever been allowed.
I'm not following how that's responsive to what I was asking. I mean, your point is that they are protecting the workforce
right.
by limiting liability even without substitution.
Correct.
Right? But if that's true, then why would they not have followed that rule in cases arising in district court? If you can trust the Superior Court because it's a federal court, certainly they could have trusted the federal district court because it's a federal district court.
Yes, I understand. But the my response is that that the court is assuming that that no claim has previously been filed against the government, and that's not always a safe assumption. Even if a suit were not filed against the United States, there still could have been an administrative claim filed. Now, if the case is filed against the officer alone in a federal court, and there's already been an administrative claim filed, then substitution allows that case to proceed without dismissal. Now, I think that we have to look at it not from the perspective of today, where we have 20 years of experience, and the common experience is that there is no administrative claim, but rather from the perspective of 1988, when, in fact, there were instances where an administrative claim was filed against the United States, and then for whatever reason, the plaintiff decided rather than pursuing the administrative claim, they preferred to have, for example, to have a jury to pursue it against the officer alone. Now, substitution in the district court allows it then for the case to proceed against the United States to judgment, on the merits, because there could have been an administrative claim.
To your question.
Yeah, let me just ask.
But with Superior Court, if the case is in Superior Court, even if there is an administrative claim, Congress would not want that case to proceed to judgment on the merits against the United States now, in Superior Court, because Congress has only entrusted the district courts to that.
Which was the section of the statute that provides the protection from liability without the substitution?
2679C. And that's been in there since the Drivers Act.
Okay, thank you.
So it was then limited to.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Unless my colleagues have further questions, we'll hear from the United States or from the defendant, Appellee, whoever they are. Not unless she turns out to need it. We're going to spend time in a more miserly fashion. We'll wait and see if she needs any additional time. Thank you, Madam Clerk.
May it please the Court. With respect to the timeliness of the removal in this action, regarding the common law claims under 28 U.S.C. 2679D, removal under this statute can take place at any time.
And now let's see if the United States can properly be substituted as a party here. statute says, one statute says district court, one says state court. Mr. Wasserman says Superior Court is not either one. It's not. So what do you say is the statutory authority for the substitution?
The statutory authority for the substitution is the FTCA case itself, 28 U.S.C. 2679 D2, which allows for the substitution, and also the common
allows for the substitution where? In what circumstance?
When it's brought in state court, it can be removed to
in
the district court.
In state court? Mm-hmm. This wasn't brought in state court.
Well, the District,
of Columbia, the District of Columbia
has repeatedly been considered a state court by this court.
How are we supposed to come to that conclusion? There are lots of other statutes that say, for purposes of this statute, the highest, like the certiorari statute, as used in this section, the word state includes territories, the District of Columbia and the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. That's the diversity statute. Same thing on the certiorari statute, though it says that for purposes of this statute, state includes the District of Columbia. And it does not say that in the FTCA. So why should we not conclude that when Congress wants the word state to include the District of Columbia, it puts it in there?
Well, sometimes, in fact, it doesn't put it in there when it does want to protect people, employees of the District of Columbia. If Congress had intended all of the federal employees in the District of Columbia not to be protected when the suit is filed in the District of Columbia, then certainly it would have said so.
Now, that doesn't follow. It's all these other statutes, and there are plenty of them. You've looked at them. You briefed this case. You know that Congress has in other statutes, when they meant the word state to include the District of Columbia, they said so. The word state courts to include the courts of the district, they said so. This time they didn't. Don't tell me anything about protected employees. Tell me why I should construe this court differently than what Congress has done in all the other statutes.
Well, I would say respectably that this court has repeatedly done so in the past.
When have we ever done that in the past?
With respect to this type of case, you've done it in Haddon, District of Columbia.
Haddon, the question was never raised, was it?
It wasn't particularly raised, but...
It wasn't raised.
Right.
Forget particularly, it wasn't raised. And the Supreme Court, back to Marshall, has said that the fact that the court exercised jurisdiction when its jurisdiction was not questioned is not precedent for future cases. Is that not true?
That's true.
So how has Haddon any authority at all for this?
I'm not particularly saying that it is authority that the District of Columbia is a state. I'm saying the District of Columbia has repeatedly been considered a state for the purposes of...
But in Haddon, that Haddon is not precedent where the question is raised.
Right.
And I don't think there's any precedent where this court has ever held that the D.C. courts are state courts for purposes of FTCA.
Your Honor is correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
But we have for other sections, right?
Yes, you certainly have.
What would be your closest case to this, your closest authority?
What
Judge Garland just asked you, we have done that for other statutes. You said, yes, you certainly have.
Yes.
Now, I'm asking you, we certainly did when? You may well be correct. I'm not challenging your correctness. I just want you to tell me what it is you're referring to.
I have cited to them in the brief, Your Honor, and if I could have the court's brief indulgence, because I left my brief at the table. With the constraints of time, I'm finding it difficult, but I did cite to those other statutes in which the District of Columbia has been considered a state in my brief. In 28 U.S.C. 1332E.
No, I'm wanting a case, or is there a case, where we have held the courts of the district were state courts where the statute did not say that they were included within the term state court?
I'm not aware of one.
All right. So your answer to Judge Garland, then, you misunderstood his question, or I misunderstood his question.
Perhaps we did.
I thought he was asking you if we had not, under other statutes, done what you're asking us to today. You said we had, and you're now saying that there are no such other cases. So one of us misunderstood that question.
But we had in other statutes. Not
have we ever held that the district court, the courts of the District of Columbia, were state courts with respect to a statute which did not define the word states as including the
I'm
district?
I'm not aware that that's been done in a case.
So but that is what you're asking us to do today.
You're not, in statute.
You're not aware of Garris versus Lindsay, in which we held.
Could you give the citation to that one, please?
Yes, of course. It's 794 F. 2nd, 722, in which we held that under 28 U.S.C. 2253, process issued by a state court includes District of Columbia prisoners who were sentenced by the District of Columbia courts. And what about the Loughran case involving the Supreme Court's interpretation of the constitutional provision for the word state?
I haven't cited that case in my brief, but if Your Honor is telling me that it's been done in the past.
Well, I guess this inquiry should be left with us then, rather than with you. Is it the case that opposing counsel said that the an employee would be protected from liability even if there were no substitutions? Is that right? Is there any provision of the Westfall Act or the FTCA that protects the individual from liability?
I don't believe that there is. The statute, well, I'll leave my answer as that. I don't believe that there is.
For common law claims against an employee of the federal government acting within the scope of his employment, a suit against the United States is the exclusive remedy?
A common law claim.
Yes. And what happens if the plaintiff in the case, forget about removal, say they bring it in the district court, it also brings constitutional claims and statutory claims? How does that case look?
They all remain in the district court.
They all remain in the district court, but the United States appears as the defendant solely for the common law claims? Is that what happens?
No, the United States appears for all of the claims.
All the claims.
In this case, if the removal for one, say, the constitutional claims were untimely, which it was not, and the removal for the common law claims were timely, the United States.
Just trying to make some sense out of, I guess, 2679B2.
I don't have that before me. B2.
Do you have it with you?
I do. And Your Honor's question is?
Well, tell me how that B2 functions. When does that come into play? If it's a suit against an employee acting within the scope of his employment, filed in district court, then the Attorney General does a certification, the United States is substituted, right?
Right.
Right. Is the United States substituted for all claims, not just the ones set forth in B1?
I believe the United States is.
Is what?
Is substituted.
For everything. Bivens claims too?
Oh, that's what Section 2 is about.
Yeah.
But it doesn't apply to Bivens claims.
The United States is not substituted as the party, but the United States is a representative. In this case, the United States wasn't substituted as the party in the Bivens action.
Well, I wanted to, maybe as a footnote aside, Mr. Wasserman says that the employee can get separate counsel, represent himself, or he can ask the United States to represent him. But what do you do with, if that's right, then what about C? Subsection C says the Attorney General shall defend any. I mean, it doesn't say may, it says shall. What's the procedure in the Department of Justice when an employee is sued for actions within the scope of his employment?
The employee goes to the employer and indicates that they were acting within the scope of their employment, and then the employer asks the Department of Justice if the employee can have representation. The Department of Justice then determines whether that.
Now, Mr. Wasserman, did Mr. Wasserman raise constitutional claims?
He did.
He did. And then how can the United States be substituted for the individual with respect to the constitutional claims?
The United States isn't substituted for the individual with respect to the constitutional claims. The United States represents the officer for the constitutional claims.
So when the removal motion is filed at that time, even if the United States had been substituted, there would have been some portion of the complaint for which the defendant, the individual, was still the defendant, not the United States.
Right.
Okay. So it's a mixed bag. It's not totally the United States.
Right. The United States is substituted under the Tort Claims Act, but the United States isn't substituted on the common law claims. It just represents.
And that's why I guess the caption of this case remains Wasserman versus
Rodacker,
because there's still other claims involved that the United States is not the not the defendant.
Okay. And with respect to the removal of the constitutional claims, that removal was timely, because Officer Rodacker is the defendant who's desirous of removal, and she was served on May 16th.
Well, you wouldn't remove half the case.
No, the whole case gets removed.
Yeah, right. I mean, pending jurisdiction and a joinder of claims and all kinds of other would prevent splitting the case up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, but the statute specifically says the entire case is removed.
Yeah.
So it's just that's just not an issue.
Right. I'm sorry.
The statute specifically says that the entire case is removed.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, unless my colleagues have further questions, your light has been on for some time now, so thank you, counsel. Well, Mr. Wasserman, together with the court, had used all of his time. We'll give him 2 minutes back for rebuttal. Mr. Wasserman.
Mr. Wasserman, I'm sorry to break your train of thought, but I just have one quick question.
I think you derailed it before it started.
Good point.
That's all right. It's only running on one track anyway.
We gathered that.
One rail. You probably noticed.
So this is on the question. You said that there would be protection from liability even without substitution.
Right. That's 20B, B1. I said C, and that is incorrect.
Don't worry. No one's holding you to that. It's 2679 B1. Is that
B1, the remedy against the United States resulting from negligence, wrongful, any acting within the is exclusive of any other
against
civil action or proceeding.
Got it.
So
got it.
It doesn't turn on state court at all.
Right. So it turns on the question of the difference is whether you're a party at all, right? Whether the employee is a party.
Now, as to the others, I won't address my other issues in any detail, obviously, in the last minute, but I would hope that if the court does decide that that the district court had jurisdiction, that it would devote some attention at least to the question of whether there is a common law right of jury. I don't think that it's disposed of in any of the Supreme Court decisions.
Is that proper rebuttal?
That's a supplication to the court.
Yeah, I don't think that was a proper rebuttal.
I'm not going to argue the merits right now.
All right, we used up your time, so you didn't get a chance to say it.
Thank you.
Call the next case. This case is submitted. Call the next case.